ya lo hace, pierna derecha, directo al arco, golazo, golazo.
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Monday, May 13th, 2019. We have a champion. It is a blue moon out there, and to celebrate Man City's win, Dwayne, of course, is with me. He made it to today, and Karthik Krishnayar, two of the most famous Man City supporters that I know, are here. Gentlemen, the floor is yours. Campione.
The key word is that you know. Thanks for that, though, Kevin. Campione, indeed. Four times in 8 years. I was telling Kevin off air, Karthik, that I was still very happy to see it happen. Obviously, there was a lot of... It was very pleasing to beat Liverpool the way that they did, to grind it out, to do so well after that Newcastle loss. But... you know, does it get old? I guess that's my question for you. Does it get old? Do you ever take it for granted?
I think it had gotten old for me last season. I'll admit that. And then this season, Liverpool pushing us the way they did made it fresh all over again. It felt like 2012. It felt like the fight with Manchester United, other than the fact that this is an opponent we probably respect and like more than Manchester United. And I have all the time in the world for Jurgen Klopp. So, I felt like it had gotten old because of the ease in which we lapped the field last season. And then this season, having a title race pushed us quite honestly to new heights. Yes, less points than last season, but I think at the business end of the season, the side was much sharper this year than at the end of last season.
Oh, well, yeah, I mean, that's just it. I watched the last year's title. I was actually in bed. I had it on my computer laptop, and it was emotional in the very final seconds, but it wasn't like I didn't feel compelled to get out to the pub and be with other people, whereas yesterday I was at the pub at 9 a.m., had orange juice. I was having orange juice, not anything in the orange juice for the record, because I had a very long day ahead of me of Raptors basketball and Game of Thrones watching to do. So I couldn't start out too wild there. But really, to me, Karthik, the championship was won on the Monday previous with that goal by Vincent Kompany. Was there ever... I didn't know if I had that emotional reaction in me anymore, but when that laser went into the top corner from that exact player, I'm not going to lie, I was screaming at the TV when that went in.
Yeah, for me it was a similar reaction. I mean, I wasn't watching. I was at a sports decision makers conference. I'd actually been with Paul Dagleish around halftime of that match, and you know obviously what his leanings would be in this, and was surrounded by Liverpool and Spurs people, so I'm following the minute by minute on The Guardian and Twitter, and when I saw Kompany, and then when I saw the streamable of the goal, it was like, wow. I ran out of the room with the conference and just let off my energy, my nervous energy, and knowing also it was Kompany, I think that made it, if it had been Silva, Aguero, Sterling, Bernardo, you know, the guys who were accustomed to see do that in the critical moments, it would have been one thing, but it being Kompany, I think, made it more special. And the goals he scored through the years in City colors have all seemingly been very significant, this becoming the most significant goal. The other one that stands out, obviously, is the one against the header right before halftime at the Etihad in 2012, right, against Manchester United, that essentially put us in position to win that title for the Aguero late winner.
And I think people forget, it's easy to forget, that he actually scored the winning goal against West Ham for the forgotten title. I like to call it the forgotten title.
Yeah, in 14, right.
Yeah, exactly. So that's another big goal that he's had for sure. You know, and he's clearly slowing down a little bit, but still clearly so important from a leadership perspective. Look, we have a lot of Liverpool fans that are listening to this. It was a remarkable story, a remarkable run by them, 97 points to not win the championship. I mean, maybe a word on how impressive that team is and whether, you know, whether is it truly a consolation prize for them that they might just, well, they should at this point go out and win the Champions League.
Yeah, I think that they just had a remarkable season. What Klopp's done building, rebuilding the identity of Liverpool. It's not just that they're playing good football, but it seems like there's an ethos and a a feel to that club that they had been lacking in the years after Rafa Benitez had left, and just very much that Liverpool feeling. And what, quite honestly, I mean, I don't want to keep piling on Manchester United, but if you look at the difference between United and Liverpool now, I think that so much of it comes down to a manager and owners that have invested. A lot to be said for what they've done. And I think also in the course of this, the next few weeks, we're going to be talking a lot about how Liverpool turned it around, and also how Spurs on their limited budget have superseded, again, Manchester United, Chelsea, and Arsenal, for frankly. So a lot of great stories in English football. I mean, even though Spurs finished fourth, it feels like we have a clear top three. Three clubs doing things really well in that so-called top six, and then three clubs that are just sort of aimless and drifting about.
Yeah, and with Hazard probably moving on at the end of the season. Sorry, Kevin. It is hard to see that this monopoly going up. Drink it in. You'll never see anything like it again. You're correct in terms of – he was correct. Mark was back in the day that we have never seen anything quite like that again. But in terms of this title race this year, I don't think we're ever going to see 98 and 97 points again. Is it sustainable? You look at Liverpool's season, I don't mean to disrespect them at all, but all of those sort of late goals that were coughed in over the years, the Everton game, you know, God help Everton there. They just can't win that fixture, can they? But, you know, it is difficult to see this happening again. It's also difficult to see City sustaining this for a third straight year. Can they possibly, I know they're a special talented team, but can they possibly do it again next year? Is this truly a dynasty that we're looking at, and are we looking at 3, 4, 5 years just like we see in the other leagues with this club, or will they maybe not have the motivation to get it done next year in your mind?
Yeah, I think also you've got to look at Europe now. That's the missing piece for the City owners group. Knocked out of that competition by having a bad game or two, or quite honestly, Real Madrid, who have not been a force in La Liga for a number of years, winning Champions League over and over again because Ronaldo got hot, and they had Cristiano Ronaldo, and he was in those decisive moments the most unplayable player that we perhaps have ever seen in our lives. So Europe is difficult, but I think that's what the ownership wants now. They're going to be focused on that. They're going to want to avoid being eliminated by another English club. And that's a little bit of a stain on these last two seasons, which from a domestic perspective are the best we've ever seen. But then, you know, unfortunately, Champions League, it isn't that City have been put out by a Juventus or a Real Madrid or a Bayern. It's been Spurs and Liverpool. So I think getting over that European hump is going to probably take away from the league campaign next season. And similarly with Liverpool, let's say they go on and they win on June 1st and they beat Spurs. I think their entire focus is going to be on the league. They would have won then two European championships and been to five finals, I think, since they had last won the top flight. It was not even the Premier League at the time, the first division. So I think you're going to see different emphasis from both clubs next season. And perhaps that was the case this year too. Maybe City wanted Europe more and Liverpool wanted the league more and it ended up being the same old, same old.
Kartik Krishnayar, thank you very much for your time today on short notice. Blue moon all day, all week for you gentlemen. It is a beautiful time to be a City fan.
Great. Thank you, Kevin. Thanks so much.
You're very welcome. We'll take a short break and we'll be right back with Paul Sabrin Herzog, Vice President of the Vancouver Southsiders Supporters Group.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network. You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at @SoccerTodaySPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/Sports Podcasting Network. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie with Dwayne Rollins. We're joined at the moment by Vice President of the Southsiders Supporters Group for the Vancouver Whitecap, Paul Sabouret-Herzog. How are you doing, Paul, this morning? And thank you for joining us.
I'm doing well, thank you.
Thanks for the early start to your day as well, obviously, for that. We're having you on for a very serious conversation to continue our coverage of, I don't even know what to call it, the scandals, I guess, in the Whitecaps, which is distracting from everything else out there right now. The Southsiders have been doing walkouts in the 35th minute for a while. Just give us an update on where that is and whether we're seeing any progress to see an end to these.
Obviously we have been doing the protests to try and raise awareness initially of the issue, which has been, I guess, quite successful. After, as I said, before and after the protest, obviously we see a lot of increased attention, a lot more people learning about what happened in 2008 and then other situations throughout the last decade. We've had a couple meetings as a result with the ownership of the Whitecaps as well as the executives. And I would say our last meeting kind of ended at a bit of an impasse. The next steps as to what we do is a bit up in the air right now. The Whitecaps are being a bit intractable and choosing to stick to their media strategy of very limited public comment, which we're finding a bit frustrating.
The last game, obviously, against your Cascadia rivals, which normally you'll have, a nice little bit of banter with, but the Timbers Army also supported your protest by walking out as well. How important was that, and how important is it for other fan groups in this league to step up and try and help raise awareness to this as well?
Well, it was obviously really appreciated. Derby matches are pretty intense for supporters, and to have them choose to, do the same thing as us, which is to move to the concourse for 10 minutes at the end of the first half and show that they're also aware of the issues and that they care about, particularly allegations of abuse and the safety of young athletes is really a powerful message. The thing that about, I guess, the stuff in 2008 is we're talking about abuse and harassment that a lot of people will find familiar. This is something that's not just limited to soccer and not just limited to, that team back, I guess the Whitecaps women's team back in 2007, 2008, and the U20 squad. This is something that hits all sports everywhere. So, the core issue is obviously the safety of youth in athletics. And I think everyone's recognizing now that we all have to do more to try and make sports safer.
Paul, you mentioned earlier the Whitecaps media strategy, and a few weeks ago it really caught a lot of people's attention when a meeting was held in Vancouver with only CTV and the direct right owners, the rights owners and representative. So basically just Bell Media and the Whitecaps together were having a meeting, and a lot of prominent reporters, J.J. Abram, for one, and others in Vancouver were left out of the meeting. Talk about people from The Sun, people from other big media outlet in the Vancouver region were left out of the meeting. There's not a lot of reaction from the team publicly to the allegation, and there's a certain aspect of brushing off the allegations. What would you like to see change in the Vancouver Whitecaps media strategy regarding the controversy of the last decade?
We were really clear when we met with them. We want them to, at first they were releasing statements signed by the club rather than any particular person. So we requested that they start taking direct ownership of their response. That resulted in the owners signing their names to that statement May 1st, which is when they had that very limited, let's call it private audience rather than press conference, with, as you say, sort of members of Bell Media's media empire. And in our meeting, last week now, on Tuesday, we also requested very clearly that they start answering questions that are put to them by media. you know, I've been speaking with people from various different outlets, and there's sort of a frustration that I guess they can find me to talk to, but they can't get any comments out of the club, or I should say any meaningful comment. I believe that the Whitecaps are responding to them, but they're not really answering the questions that are put to them directly. You know, the only thing we've really seen come out from them is those statements that were issued in, I guess, late February, updated April 1st, and then the one on May 1st. And for a lot of people, those just aren't sufficient. They're not addressing the substance of the concerns. They're not answering questions about what happened in 2007, 2008, and then there was an incident in 2011 that was also mentioned. There's, you know, some other stuff that came out during this, like the hiring of Brett Adams in 2013, and you know, we still have significant concerns about what happened in 2017 in the Whitecaps residency. So we just want them to just start being accountable and being open in their response.
Well, you literally took the word out of my mouth, Paul. Accountability was going to be my question here. How important is accountability for a sports team versus their fans? There's a certain amount of trust. There's a trust contract between a sports team and their fan base. Accountability is one of the exchange of that non-written contract between the fans and the team. When accountability, which leads to trust, is broken, that relationship goes into trouble. Where would you evaluate this relationship between the fans and the Whitecaps is at this moment?
Well, I've been seeing a lot of frustration, not just from supporters. You know, I think we all recognize that supporters in general, wherever they are, will be investing a lot more of their time and energy in the club than even, you know, a regular fan who might still attend all the games and whatnot. But I think the way the Whitecaps have handled this has definitely damaged the public perception of the club. For us supporters, it's a bit awkward because we've been afforded these private meetings with Jeff Mallett, one of the minority owners, and you know, we recognize that this is something that hasn't happened before, and it is, I guess, a step, at least according to the Whitecaps, of them trying to show us what they're doing, which, of course, they're not willing to talk about publicly, and they're sort of asking us to trust them, but we really need them to act in public before we can judge what's what they're doing. So it's a bit of a mixed bag for us supporters. We're getting access to ownership, which we haven't really had before. We're having really honest conversations, you know, on difficult topics. And there's some stuff that's been said that I would say, as someone who's been in the meetings before in years past, would never have been in a position to talk about without it degenerating very quickly into, you know, a shouting match or something like that, a little more oppositional. So there is an element of trust that we have that they're working on this. We're just really frustrated by the fact that they're not doing so publicly and that they still haven't met with the women. That's been a big sticking point for us. And I don't know that we can really place too much stock in what they're doing until they have met with the women on the women's terms, because you know there's a power imbalance between an organization with all the resources and all the money and all the people that the Whitecaps have, and then these former players, most of whom had to abandon their dreams of playing for the national team, and you know they're in their, I guess, second careers or their first careers if they were young enough when they left the soccer program.
Paul, I guess, you know, normally when this happens, I should say normally, but often when this happens, you know, people lose their jobs from stuff like this. I'm wondering whether we're at the point of no return when it comes to the senior management that were around at the Whitecaps. And in your mind, does some of those senior management people have to go to really make this a way forward for the fans and the relationship and for just the community to re-embrace this team fully?
I think for some of the people that are out there, that is something that I think, yeah, it's kind of a condition of them returning. You know, I know people who've decided to cancel their season tickets and they've been watching what's been happening, and they say that until there is some change at the top, that they can't continue to financially support the club just because they don't trust the intentions of those at the top. And obviously there's many people who, you know, are just frustrated and wish that the current executives would do the right thing for whatever that might mean to them. So there's definitely some people out there who are thinking that a change in management is required before they really even consider rebuilding their relationship with the Whitecaps. That's a really personal, I guess, choice that everyone's making, though. So I'm not, you know, I'm not speaking on behalf of the Southsiders or the Curva Collective people that we've been working with. When I say that, I'm more referring to individuals who've expressed that. But I think we also recognize that the ownership group has kind of made a really strong statement of support in the way that they've, you know, met with us, and the tone of those meetings, that there's, it seems like ownership is backing the actions of the management throughout all of these various issues. And, you know, there's information out there that we don't have access to, that we're not privy to. So maybe there's a reason for that continued vouching of ownership for management.
Paul, before we say goodbye for today, the floor is yours. Do you have any message to Vancouver fans or supporters and or supporters out there from the Southsiders?
I think this is something that everyone can get involved in, regardless of your connection to the Whitecaps, is really start looking for like safe sport initiatives. I know in British Columbia right now, the province is doing some work, I believe through Via Sport, in sort of examining what policy changes or what government action might be available to help make sports safer. I'm certain that there's a national conversation as well. And, you know, we're seeing that in maybe the Canadian Soccer Association had their AGM recently, and they have all these initiatives, I guess, that they're putting forward. So, you know, if you're involved in a local club, wherever you are, reach out to them, see what's happening, try and get connected to whatever work is being done, and we can make some real positive change in Canada and hopefully make it so that, you know, no other young kids have to experience what some of these former players have gone through.
Paul Sabourin Herzog, thank you very much for your time today. You can follow Paul on social media at SubEdgeHog, and you can join him in the supporters section of the Southsiders in home games. Paul, thank you for your time today, and we hope you have a great day today.
Thanks for having me, guys.
And we'll be right back after this short break to talk about some games that happened this weekend.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sportpodcastingnetwork. You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie, as always, joined by Dwayne Rollins in Toronto. Dwayne, it is time to talk about Major League Soccer and talk about the Canadian Premier League. Or do you really want to break down the Chelsea-Wolves games from yesterday? No, I don't think we care enough. It's over now. Let's talk about MLS Friday, Dwayne. Speaking of the Vancouver Whitecaps, they won at home 1-0 versus the Portland Timbers. Freddie Montero with his second goal of the year. It's six versus the Portland in MLS.
Look, I mean, yeah, the Whitecaps have actually turned it around a little bit on the pitch in recent days, and they've done so in a way that we're used to seeing on a Mark DeSantis team. I almost feel guilty talking about it on that perspective, though, having just followed up through a poll. Paul's interview there. But, you know, to bring this back to the scoreboard, they have tightened things up defensively, and that's really how they're going to be successful this year. I don't think there's enough talent there that they can really go to the top half of the standing. But if they can do things like that they did on Friday, then they should be able to stay competitive. And that's, you know, when you lack the top-end talent, you have to be organized, and at least the Whitecaps have started to figure that out. That's a hallmark of DeSantos' team. So I would suspect that this might be a trend moving forward. As I said, if there's, you know, the high-end talent's not there, then it's going to be difficult for them to get a lot of W's, but certainly they should be able to stay close in games and continue to work through this fan issue, which is not going away. I mean, I think we don't really need to say any more than that, but we've already said a lot about this. We will continue to cover it, but it's just, as I say, I feel guilty talking about the scoreboard stuff, so maybe we'll just move on.
FC Cincinnati, Montreal, 2-1 for FC Cincinnati with a controversy in the game. There was a goal that was called off, and unfortunately it would have been a tying goal for Montreal in this game. There was an offside call on Daniel Lovitz. It's really tough to call. It didn't go to VAR. It could have. It was really close, so close that no one can really tell if it was offside or not. It's more than a 50-50, and of course, by the rules of VAR, if it's not big error, what's the egregious error? We're not going to change.
Clear and obvious.
Clear and obvious error, sorry. So, it wasn't clear, and it wasn't obvious. The goal wasn't given, and it's more than that. The play was whistled down before the ball went into the net because of the offside. So, when that happens, it's not reviewable because it's not a goal, it's not a red card, and it's not a mistaken identity situation. So, the play wasn't actually reviewable because the damn linesman put his arm up too soon. There's supposed to be a directive in Major League Soccer that when it's that close, you let it play. You can always go back for those ones. But it is a play that we can talk about for a long time. Rémi Garde is not happy. Rémi Garde is not happy with that call. The coach of Montreal is not happy with the schedule. The last ones to play on Wednesday, the first ones to play on Saturday. Of course, the Red Bulls were at home, and then they traveled to Dallas in a similar situation. But still, the impact against the world, Rémi Garde believes everyone is favoring other teams, and they're not putting the best scenario forward for the impact. And, the impact still with a great beginning of season, but a little misstep on Saturday in the Queen City.
Yeah, there is an element of unpredictability, but the impact, whether, you know, clear and obvious is such a load of you-know-what when it comes to VAR, and that's always been my big issue against it. I don't want to get into a VAR rant here today, although there's lots of them out there if you want to find them. It was not a very popular situation this weekend.
Yeah.
Look, yeah, they're supposed to leave their flag down, which I equally don't like because it
affects
anyway.
The play. You should ref or be a linesman the way you were shown and trained. And now if you start to second guess yourself, yeah, it's not the best situation either. But there is points in this scenario that you can go on both sides, and you do see a team that deserve better. Montreal deserve better than that loss, but it is what it is. It's just one loss. Montreal did not have back-to-back losses since last year. Still not the case, and I think Montreal's going to be okay next Saturday.
Yeah, as I said, Well, people underestimate how much rest and how much travel and how much things like that matter in this league. And you know, when you play 3-8, for instance, with Atlanta last year, Toronto the year before, when they had their great seasons, one thing that they were doing that other teams in the past had not done is winning those 3-8 kind of scenarios. That doesn't happen a lot in MLS because teams get beat up. They don't have the depth. Even good teams like SKC, and we can talk about them in a minute probably,
yeah,
and their struggles. They had three men on the bench or something? Like, that's insane. And
that's
it has everything to do with their way, the travel that they had to do early in the year. And, you know, the one advantage to this is that as we watch SKC's season go into the toilet, is that maybe 2 years in a row when this happens to one of their more talented teams in the league that goes deep into a Champions League, that the league might start to go, well, maybe they have a point when they want larger roster sizes, right?
Maybe we're going to give you $1 million more of special Champions League allocation money. that if you make it, well, if you make it to the, well, of course, if you make it to the Champions League, you're making it to the knockout stage as an MLS team, and maybe you do have a little bonus of, okay, three more players for you, three more players for you, three more players for you, and maybe we can compete on two fronts. It's funny, because I've been watching a lot of documentaries recently on World War II, and battling on two fronts, guess what? It makes both fronts vulnerable. So that could be what it is. Toronto, speaking of fronts that are...
Yes, they should not have invaded Russia. But that's a positive hashtag tweet from 1944.
Exactly. Anyway. That's a timely reference. Toronto 1, Philadelphia 2. Toronto losing at home versus Philly. And Pozuelo with blonde hair.
Jesus, that was a poor hair choice.
What is it, 2001, where we all bleach ourselves? What is this?
Well, Sergio Aguero did it earlier this year, too. Hackapaws has become, as we predicted, a very effective technique in Major League Soccer. We got Jose Altidore back in that game late, but not in enough time to do much. And, you know, God love Jordan Hamilton, and he has, I think, superseded most people's expectations for him sticking around, but he's still Jordan Hamilton, and he doesn't take enough pressure.
Sorry, I was going to say he had one great game as a super sub, scoring twice, 2 weeks ago?
Yeah.
3 weeks ago?
Yeah, the 4-3 game against Minnesota, yeah. But Toronto's defensive vulnerability continues to be on display. They when they don't have Pozuelo being it, well, Pozuelo, I guess you want to call them, when they're together and working well, like, that's a dangerous team, but when they're not, they're not. And we saw it again in the weekend. It was another frustrating game to watch from a TFC perspective. And, you know, it's a bit of a slump now after a pretty good start. They got the points on the board and in the pocket, so that's good. But at the same time, they're not taking advantage of the games in hand, which means that those points aren't in the pocket, which is getting convoluted now. So, yeah.
So they played in it's funny, too, when you look at the results, there's, like, clear two halves of the season they had. They're 10 game played now. So their first five games, 10 games played because they got two postponed because of Champions League. So first five games, 4-1, I think. And then the next five game, 1-4. A very distinct two halves of a first third of a season for Toronto.
And it's getting amplified by their failure to add. And there's a lot of people frustrated with Ali Curtis, a lot of people frustrated with the manager, which is par for the course in Toronto. I mean, there's a lot of fans and they tend to have lived through a lot, in terms of all of their fandom, if they're a Toronto sports fan, right? There hasn't been a lot of high water marks in this city over the last 30 years. So
yeah, outside last night, outside of that shot from Kawhi.
Well, there's been moments. I mean, TFC obviously won championship and the bat flip and all that sort of jazz. But by and large, Toronto sports fans are a little bit skittish sometimes, and they tend to attack their own a lot. It's a habit of the city, so that's happening now. I maintain that it is better to add properly than to add quickly, so that they shouldn't just have blown their load on, you know, any old player just to have a player come in. It is more important for them to get it right, but at the same time, you got to be careful you don't slip too far down those standings. You don't want to fall below third or so, I don't think, if you have a realistic chance to turn it around in the playoffs.
And to have a game at home, at least in the playoffs. And Toronto has a big home field advantage, especially in the playoffs with the weather. And not as, like, because Montreal would have that, but Montreal is so cold that you can basically not even play at Stade Saputo in early November. It would have to be probably at the Stade Olympique. And then you don't have that cold weather advantage, which Toronto will have. Moving on, we gotta get through those scores. LA Galaxy 0, NYCFC 2, and the first coach bump of the 2019 season, New England 3, San Jose 1. I guess a new coach does give you a win 2 times out of 3, if we're looking at this weekend, and we'll get to the other ones. But New England 3, San Jose 1. And Cincinnati 2-1, so Yohan Damé got his first win as MLS coach, the youngest coach in MLS history, 29 years old. What was I doing when I was 29? Yeah, not coaching MLS. He got his first victory, and of course Colorado lost, because Colorado will Colorado. But New England 3, San Jose 1, Dwayne.
Yeah, so Colorado is... historically bad. We ran the numbers last week, we talked to Abby. It's I mean, what do you say at this point? It's getting into that 16-point range at this point. 11 games, 2 points. That's not many points per game. I'm not a math expert, but many points per game.
It's below 11. One. It's way below one. Columbus 0, yeah. LAFC 3. Another great performance by Carlos Vela and Adio Adamande as well. Chicago 2, Minnesota 0. Big win for Chicago. Colorado, we're saying 2-3. Losing at home versus Real Salt Lake. Real Salt Lake getting the best in the Rocky Mountain Cup to start this year. Seattle 1, Houston 0. And on Sunday to finish MLS quickly, Atlanta 1, Orlando 0. The Battle of Florida has been drawn, and the first of the battle goes to Atlanta. Who's going to win the war this year for the Florida Man Cup? And DC United Sporting Kansas City 1-0 for DC United. But before we say goodbye, Dwayne, there was three games in the Canadian Premier League, and I have to say merci à tout le monde. Thank you to everyone who has been supporting me since Thursday with my open letter about the French content in the Canadian Premier League. Together, we can do a lot of things. Together, from coast to coast, we can move mountains. And I do appreciate your support that has overwhelmed me with positivity this weekend. May 11th, Saturday, Valor 1, Halifax Wanderers FC. Thank you to Red River Rising, the supporters group for Valor, who is supporting me publicly with my thought process, Dwayne, of having more French. But 1-0 for Valor. Forge FC losing at home against Cavalry. Cavalry unbeaten, only wins. They keep on winning. Cavalry is going to win the spring season. It's almost a guarantee now.
Well, I mean, Winnipeg might have something to say with it, but look, not to toot our own horn, but when you look at those standings, they're awfully close to how we predicted them. But that was a huge, huge win for them because we all, I think, saw Hamilton near the top of the standings, and with two losses already, it's a little disappointing from a Forge perspective. But Calgary certainly, you know, what they did is they built from the back forward, and really that was the correct approach. And it was a familiarity with Calgary as well. I will have a lot more to say about this, obviously, on Two Solitudes this Thursday, but certainly on a quick perspective right now, Calgary has been, all of it was advertised in the lead up to this, and I maybe two more wins
and more,
and they're going to the final. It's a strange format when you think about it, but here you go.
And before we say goodbye, Dwayne, you know where we're going? We're going to Brazil. We're going to Brazil. And now they're going to believe us. And now they're going to believe us because we're going to Brazil. Canada yesterday in penalties versus Costa Rica. The winner gets a ticket to the U-17 World Cup. And Canada is going to the World Cup.
5 years too late, but we're going to Brazil. We'll drag out that banner. It's good for the kids. I shouldn't joke, but the Voyagers had a banner that said the road to Brazil, and we all signed it. I guess that would have been about 2014, and we all know how that one ended. So let's cheer these guys on. The USA also qualified. They do it a little more routinely, so not as big of a deal, but Canada was brought to a World Cup.
Haiti and Mexico qualified too.
Yeah, Haiti for the second time ever. This first time Canada's gone to the U-17 since 2013. You know, it's not uncommon for them to qualify for Youth World Cup, but it has been a few cycles, so it is good to see them get back there, for sure. And I was happy to see it. And, you know, they rebounded after blowing that 2-goal lead against the U.S. They played the U.S. in the semifinals of the tournament, which is for pride now, but we'll see how this goes. And as you say, tournaments in Brazil, so good experience for these guys.
Exactly, great experience for these guys. And we'll have more along this summer with the U-17 Men's World Cup on our Patreon page, where you can find the Two Solitude Soccer Podcast. You like what we do, you would like exclusive contents and podcasts, go to patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. This is where you can get Dwayne and I's CanPL coverage and our exclusive content that we want to do just for our most loyal listeners out there, the Patreons. And you can do that at patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. $2 a month will give you access to our exclusive content. Less than a half a coffee a day will give you access to at least 2 hours a month of premium quality Canadian soccer audio. But as always, until next time, I'm Kevin Laramie. Dwayne Rollins, as always. And thanks to Karti Krishnayer and Paul Sabrina Hedgehog for their time today. And until tomorrow, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.